end of the week edition of the Dunked on Basketball podcast. It is nigh on All-Star time. That means it is time to give our All-Star picks. And we're also going to do a beginning of our series trade deadline previews for the New York Knicks and Atlanta Hawks, two very interesting teams as the trade deadline approaches. Joining me as often, Danny LaRue. What's up?
Doing well, man. How are you?
Not bad. Not bad. I'm ready to release us from the tyranny of All-Star voting and allow us to just pick our teams entirely unfettered.
Yeah, one thing that was interesting about this, because I asked you what format you wanted to use, was the idea of it being solely our picks. And what I found was I actually would have liked the crutch of being able to use the picks, because they're the last spot in each conference was the hardest one for me to do. And each conference will probably have at least one guy who I wouldn't have had on my team.
Yeah, it, Wade and Kobe, I'm taking it.
Yeah, or a couple possibilities depending on what happens in the East.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's start with that Eastern Conference, which, you know, there's been some people saying, oh yeah, the East is catching up, and maybe in the mid tier they are, though a lot of those teams now have kind of fallen back to earth, the Magic, the Hornets, among them, the Celtics as well, just at least from a record standpoint. But if you go through and really look at the players that we're selecting for these teams, especially towards the bottom, it's clear to me that the West still has far, far superior talent.
Yeah, especially when you also consider that of the players who, let's say, are not All-Star caliber now, but could be in the next 2 years, a larger portion of them are in the West as well.
Yeah, you make a great point there. But let's start with the Eastern Conference. Who are your starters? We're going to follow the same rubric as the positions are now, which doesn't make sense. I would love for it to be guards, wings, or point guard, wing, bigs, but that unfortunately is unrealistic these days. So it's two guards, three front courtmen. Who are your picks for the starters?
So for me, there were four spots that were relatively clear, and this is counting Jimmy Butler as a backcourt guy, which is a little bit of a hedge, but I'm okay with it.
Well, I think that's what he's listed.
Yeah, exactly.
As, on the ballot, so I think that's, you got to do it that way.
So for me, not in a particular order, but just going smallest to biggest, the guys that I would have as the clear-cut starters, the four, would be Lowry, Butler, Paul George, and LeBron. I think those have been the four best players in this conference. It works out from a positional standpoint. And then the last one was hard. And I went through a couple of different guys, and I ended up with Paul Millsap. One of the differences between how you and I see All-Star is I kind of see it more of a single season thing and see the overall arc of their career as kind of the tiebreaker. And so for me, I think Chris Bosh is a better player, but I think Millsap has had a really nice year, and I think you reflect the slight amount that he's been better than Chris Bosh this year by giving him the start.
Yeah, to me, I mean, I think the All-Star game should, in some respects, you know, if one guy has just been way better that season, I can see giving it to him. But and Bosh, I mean, is amazing. People don't realize that Bosh is, this is like his 10th All-Star game in a row or something like that, like something crazy like that. You know, he's clearly going to be a Hall of Famer. For people who may not think of him that way, you should. And so I think, yeah, if there's a guy who's been better over the course of his career, I would rather pick him if it's at all close. And also, I have a special rule for guys I think of as just clear top five type talents in the NBA. Like, you know, you consider like Kevin Durant last year. You know, if he missed, if a guy misses a bunch of time, if he's healthy and you're a top five player in the league, you need to be in the All-Star game, regardless of whether you've missed time that year. For guys who are kind of lesser lights, you know, like Kyrie Irving, for example, was not on my East team because he missed basically up until Christmas. You know, that's kind of where I draw the distinction with respect to injuries and games played. So yeah, I went with Bosh because, yeah, I think he is a better player than Paul Millsap. If Millsap had a little bit better of a playoffs last year, I might have been persuaded to go the other way. And also, I think that Bosh just has more versatility defensively, having shown the ability to play center. He is a 38% knockdown three-point shooter, whereas Millsap is kind of a guy who's, you know, shooting about 30%. He'll take it if he's wide open, and that's about it. I mean, he's been wonderful from an efficiency standpoint. He's been the Hawks' best player, but is still not a guy who I feel like can score against the best defenses. So that's why I went with Bosch, but it admittedly is very close to me.
And something I really like about Bosch, and one of the other reasons I considered him for the first team, is I love the role that he has with Miami and that kind of the idea of value, where he's, in many ways, he's the anchor of the second unit, but also playing such a pivotal role in the first unit. And that's a really rare combination. And that his role is somewhat, his offensive role both sides is somewhat different with those two. I think that shows his versatility and just the talent level. And he's been one of the things that's really kept them together, even though, you know, I think they're on the fringe of the East playoff race right now, but that he's been kind of he's been the glue for that team so far.
All right, how about reserves? I obviously had Millsap as one of my front court reserves. This is two guards, three front court, and then two wild cards from any position. Millsap, I obviously had you, I assume, had Bosch. Yep. Who do you have as your guards?
So the two backcourt players were the first. I'm going to do them in order because I was surprised by the order. Was Kemba Walker. I think he's had a fabulous season. Charlotte, there are a lot of different things you can say were the reason their offense has been so good, but I think Kemba's been a major part of that. And then the other guy is John Wall. And John Wall, I don't think he's had that great a year, but the astonishing lack of two guards in the East just made it so that he was the next best guy, so he got on.
Why do you think Kemba Walker's been better than John Wall or even Isaiah Thomas this year?
Well, those were the...
Because I did not have Walker on, although he was probably my toughest omission.
Yeah, it's funny. You said those were the three guys that I was kind of balancing between. And I think that he's done a nice job creating, like, the reason I had him over Isaiah, let's say, is because when I watch the Celtics sometimes sputter at the end of the fourth quarter and just kind of fall out of games, I just think the point guard's job is to basically make sure that the offense is humming while I love defensive value too. And I think that Kemba's done a better job of that than Isaiah has.
I think that Isaiah, although it will surprise people since he's been a bench player, I think he has more of a track record of playing like this than Walker does. Walker basically only has this season. I'm more inclined to believe that, you know, what Thomas is doing is real, whereas Walker has been shooting pretty well in long twos, much better at the rim. Part of that, I think, is just due to the Hornets system helping a lot. And also just the difference in what the Celtics have done when Thomas has been on the floor versus off. It's about a 10 points per 100 difference. So I think that's pretty huge to me. That's why I had Thomas over Walker. He was one of my wild cards. And John Wall is just, you know, he's just an order of magnitude better than both of those guys to me, even if he had kind of a rough stretch at various points in the season, has been injured. I mean, he's kept the Wizards afloat somehow with smoke and mirrors, and now that they're getting healthy again, they're actually looking pretty good. I mean, Wall just is, even if you look at, oh, you know, his PER isn't quite as good as these guys, like, he just has been so much better for so much longer that, to me, he's just, you know, not even in the same class as some of those other guys. My second guard was DeMar DeRozan. Do you have him on your team at all?
I do not. He was the closest omission. I feel like he's a nice player. He's been a good success story, but I think that he has not been as integral, let's say, to the success of the Raptors. He was seriously considered, like, that last spot in the East. I had him listed there and then crossed him out and then had somebody else there. And I mean, I think that while I don't love on off numbers, from what I remember, they haven't been super kind to him. And, you know, DeRozan, he's in this conversation. Me not including him is not meant as any sort of, like, significant slight against him, though I'm not the biggest fan of his game. But he has been a lot better this year, and rewarding him for that would be kind of nice, even though he has already made the All-Star game.
Toronto is the sixth best offense in the league, and they basically have two guys that you would look at as, like, really awesome offensive players. And DeRozan is one of them. I think he's found a way to be more efficient, you know, still only a little bit above average true shooting percentage. I can understand if you don't particularly care for the aesthetics of his game. And he's not, like, some great shakes defensively either. But I think he's still a better player than Kemba Walker, you know, was an all-star 2 years ago, again, in maybe an even weaker field, but nonetheless, a little bit more of a track record of doing this, a little bit more that makes you think this is sustainable than Walker, who has really only reached this level this year. All right, so who else do you have then as your backup frontcourtman?
So the frontcourt, we already talked about the third kind of guy. Then the other two spots in the frontcourt, I gave to Drummond and Horford. They've both been good this year.
Yep,
I think those are the kind of clear-cut next two guys there. They've both been good. They've been key parts of their team's success.
Yeah, I mean, I might have Carmelo ahead of one or both of those guys. He's still been the engine that's powering a Knicks team. I think one of the mistakes that people, and especially like with his passing these days, he's not quite as good off the bounce as he was, not quite as good in isolation as he was, but he's now leveraging that into more passing. His defense has been better than in past years, but the Knicks have basically had an average offense, and they have two guys that you would really look at as good offensive players, him and Porzingis is a rookie. So I think just overall his team performance and his individual numbers have both been good. He's been getting better as the year has gone on, coming off of that surgery, and also another guy who just has the track record of being a great player for a long time. So I might even have him ahead of Drummond or Horford, both of whom would make it for me as the final wild card either way. And then I had Thomas as my last wild card. Did you even have Thomas as being close?
Oh yeah, he was definitely close. I mean, the last spot for me was between Thomas. Oh, so well, first I'll say my other wild card spot is a guy you haven't mentioned at all, is Nikola Batum. I think he's been great this year. I think his case is also helped by how the team cratered without him. I think that was we saw that, and I think he's been another part of their offensive success. And I think he's done really well this year. Again, the difference between us being that I acknowledge that there are other better players. So Batum and Melo were my two wild cards, and the other guys in that conversation. Isaiah Thomas was seriously considered. DeRozan, Pau Gasol has had a nice year. I think that certain things like RPM overstate his defensive impact, but he still had a very good year. So those were the guys I considered, but I ended up going with Melo because he's been, again, an important part of his team's success. He's been a very good player. And when you look at the Knicks, like, they're a team that has, I would say, they've pretty clearly outperformed expectations. And he has been a big part of that. Of course, so has Porzingis. But I think Melo has been better this year and is a better overall player right now.
Batum, again, fell victim to the, all right, this is a blip here. He really hasn't been anywhere close to an all-star level before. You know, and I kind of think, too, about looking back into posterity. And Thomas isn't one of these guys either. I mean, you go through these guys in the East. I mean, Isaiah Thomas, even DeRozan, sort of, Drummond, Horford, maybe Drummond will be a perennial all-star kind of guy. But, and even Horford, not a guy who, you have to kind of search deeper to see that he's an all-star. But I feel like, if you're in the West, he's just nowhere near close to guys like Blake Griffin or LaMarcus or, AD, guys like that who are in the backup front court in the West. So it is, you're sort of like in these last two or three, getting down to players who you're thinking, you don't think of as really just like, in the conversation for true superstar type of players. And that's kind of disappointing in the East, frankly.
Conceptually, would you be okay with having four point guards on your roster if you thought they were the four of the five best backcourt players?
Sure. I mean, that's what the system is. So you have to go by that for at least the time being. So Dwayne Wade, why is he not in there for you?
I just think that he hasn't been as good as the other guys. If you want to go more on the historical argument, of course, he's a great star. He's been a huge part of the league, but offensively he's been important, but not essential. And defensively, of course, he's problematic, let's just say. And now he was amazing constant for them early in the season. He's missed a little bit of time now, but for me, it was just as basic as the other guys are having better years.
Yeah, and Wade has kind of been a legacy pick even for the last couple of years, and again, an artifact of a weak conference as well, even to be that. He hasn't really been that efficient. Subjectively, he's had some moments, but still, what does he really do well when you're asking that question, even offensively? The numbers, the on-off stuff, his efficiency numbers aren't really that high. He's not really blowing by guys in pick and rolls. He can kind of do his post-ups, but he's a big record scratch guy when he doesn't have the ball, can't shoot at all. Even from mid-range, he hasn't been effective. So although he's had some flashes every now and again, I think he just hasn't been that consistent. You just look at like where the Heat's offense is kind of mired right now, and they're going through him a ton. I think he's also hijacking the offense away from guys like Bosch and Dragic, who might be able to be a little bit more efficient. All those things come into him not making it. For me, how about Brook Lopez?
I considered him a little bit. I just don't think he's – I think personally Pau Gasol has had a slightly better year than Brook. Also, his team being bad is not his fault. But.
Yeah, and Gasol just, you know, his true shooting percentage is like 51%. I don't think he's a positive on defense just from watching him. He's been horrendous on the defensive glass. That's going to continue to be a major problem for the Bulls now that Noah is out. I would not have Pau Gasol on the team either, though it wouldn't shock me if he gets selected by the coaches. And Lopez, yeah, I mean, he's sort of like a worse version of Gasol in a lot of ways. You know, if Brooklyn hadn't just completely cratered these last 10 games or so, maybe I would have considered him a little bit more.
Did you think even a glorious brief second about Porzingis?
Yes, I did, actually. But you know, if you go kind of like by PR, he's up there. But I'm still not quite sold on him yet. As well, he's been a little bit below average from an efficiency standpoint. I think his spacing helps, but still, I mean, if you wanted to win a game tomorrow, and you had either Porzingis or Al Horford or Paul Millsap, it wouldn't be a very long thought.
And if you're picking a Knick, you pick Melo. He's been a bigger part of what they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. Kevin Love, what about him?
Another guy who was considered. I feel like he struggled in kind of an efficiency way, and his defense is, of course, atrocious at times. So I considered him, but he wasn't above Gasol in terms of if I was going to add a big guy.
In the aggregate, I think that Warriors game has really cast too negative of a light on his defense. I think he's actually totally fine against most teams.
Yeah.
You know, and that's really more of what the test should be in this particular inquiry. But, you know, he, especially now that Kyrie has come back, he's been doing absolutely nothing. He's averaging like 12 a game or something since Kyrie came back. His usage rate is below 20%. And whether he has the skills or not, he hasn't necessarily displayed them for more than really the first month of the year. And so that's why I would not have him in there. And then Kyrie, if he had come back and been absolutely dominating himself, you know, since he returned, maybe I might have considered him because I do think he's a better player than, say, Isaiah Thomas. But he hasn't been, you know, he's still kind of been working back in. His true shooting percentage is only like 50% right now. He's had some bad shooting games. Defense has not looked good so far. And with all that, the amount of time that he's missed, I couldn't consider him. All right, before we move on to the Western Conference, I want to tell you about our new sponsor, Helix Sleep. Buying a mattress is really kind of a pain. You go into the store, they're asking for like $3,000 for, you know, a king-size mattress. You lay on it for 10 minutes. You can't really tell anything by doing that. You feel awkward in the store. You're going to, like, can't even take your shoes off or anything. You're not going to learn anything about a mattress in that amount of time. Helix Sleep will give you the same or better quality mattress delivered to your door, starting at $600, going up to about $1,000 for the California King that my girlfriend and I got. And what's more, Helix Sleep mattresses are going to be personalized to you. You go on their site, take a 2 to 3 minute questionnaire, see the mattress being designed for you, why it's fit for you. It can either be a split design for you and your significant other, or a blend that fits both of you. That's what my girlfriend and I ended up getting. And it's been incredibly comfortable. It arrives at your door in 7 to 10 business days in a box the size of some golf clubs. You open it up, it expands, you put it on your bed, and we've slept amazingly well ever since then. There's now a discount code that you can use as well, the usual CAPSPACE, all one word in caps that we've been using. Easy to remember because we talk about CAPSPACE all the time on the program. So you can go to helixsleep.com, fill out that questionnaire, get an awesome mattress, and if for some reason it doesn't work for you, you can return it for free within 100 days. Very easy process to do that if by some chance it's not what you wanted, but I highly doubt that'll be the case because it worked exceedingly well for my girlfriend and I despite our rather large difference in statures. So that's helixsleep.com. Use that CAPSPACE code. Get $50 off any mattress. You'll be glad that you did. You're going to sleep incredibly well. All right, let's get to the West now. Give me your West backcourt starters.
Stephen Curry and Russell Westbrook. I'm not really sure there's much of an argument there.
Nope, there isn't. front court starters.
Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Draymond Green. I think those have been the three best guys. If you want to use a different rubric, you could go a different way with the last one, but the first two are inarguable to me.
Kawhi and KD, yeah. You're saying? You don't feel like KD has missed the time that he's missed matters at all?
Nope.
I don't really. I mean, he's missed like less than 10 games. Yep.
And he's been awesome. You know, like I can see, you know, that gives a margin. So if somebody can take the spot from him, they can do that, but nobody did.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Draymond Green, you know, front court guy. He doesn't have to be a center, obviously, under the new rules. Is there anyone else that you considered there? I think a lot of people, you know, might have had Anthony Davis, might have looked at Blake Griffin, maybe, if you were healthy. But, you know, I think it is pretty clearly Green, but do you feel the same way?
Yeah, I do. I think that Green has done a really good job with this Warriors team, which is the best. They're right now, they're a historical team. And Davis has done well. You know, Davis is definitely on my team. And also, when you talk about Griffin has missed substantially more time, you know, just with his injury. Also, the Clippers have looked relatively decent without him, though they played shaky competition most of that time. But, you know, I think Green has outclassed them so far. That is in no way saying that he is a better player than them, but he has had a better season. And for me, when you're in that kind of marginal a decision, I want to reward the guy, especially when he's a part of something truly special.
Yeah, I think that's right. If Anthony Davis were having the year that he had last year or this year, that would make the decision hard for me. But Green, even in just the solely box score based metrics, is almost as high, you know, in PER as AD is. You know, he has over a 20 PER. He's been getting, you know, filling out the box score with all these triple doubles, even though he's been hunting for them a little bit on the assists every now and again to my chagrin. But, and then you look at his defense. I mean, he was second in Defensive Player of the Year last year. I thought he should have been first. He's still, I think, a top five defensive player in the league. He's the key to everything that they're trying to do defensively. His ability to grab and go has really unlocked a Warriors offense that has reached a new level this year. I think he's been key in helping Steph Curry, you know, who is now, again, back up to the best PER of all time, having one of the best seasons of all time now. I think he has really helped that. So, yeah, I feel great about him as a starter. Give me your reserve guards.
Reserve guards, two longtime All-Stars, Chris Paul, James Harden. I think they've both been, I mean, Harden, obviously the Rockets have disappointed this year, but he's still been good. Chris Paul is Chris Paul. I don't think I need to do a sales pitch there. And one thing I thought was interesting with Houston is, last year, they ended the season 12th in offensive efficiency, which is, you know, that's fine. Their defense was obviously better than this year. Before last night's game, because I checked it before that, they were 8th this year. And, I mean, they had a lot of struggles early in the year, and Harden is the engine of their offense, so I think he deserves some credit for that.
Yeah, you look at, I mean, Ty Lawson is disappointed. I mean, granted, the whole team is disappointed. Maybe he's been a contributor to their defensive slide. But you're right. I mean, this is a team that still has been an average team. And who else is really that good on this team? I mean, Dwight Howard has had some moments at times, but has not been particularly consistent. And there's no one else that you can really point to that's some big threat. So I think, and with them being eighth in offense, I mean, granted, that's a big, you know, tight pack there. They could go up, down from that at any time, you know, just with a couple of bad games. But yeah, I think he deserves a lot of credit for that and is still very much a clear all-star in my mind. How about your reserve front court?
Anthony Davis, Blake Griffin, DeMarcus Cousins. I think they've all been very good this year. They've all been, you know, important to their team's success. And I think those guys are a cut above, you know, there are a lot of big men that I consider for the wild card spot, but I think those guys are a cut above everybody else.
I went with AD and DeMarcus, especially, I mean, DeMarcus has had 30 now in like something like 10 of his last 12 games or something like that, like just completely insane. The usage that he's able to have as a big guy, you know, even on average efficiency, is pretty darn remarkable. And he could definitely play some defense still when he is motivated to, which is, has waxed and waned. My last front court guy was LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yeah.
Again, kind of going back to past performance a little bit, the fact that he has fit right into what the Spurs are trying to do, that he's just playing, winning basketball. He had a rough first month and a half or so shooting the ball, but that has gone back now. I mean, a lot of two-point jumpers, which is what he relies on a lot, can be in some ways almost more volatile even than three-pointers can. So I'm choosing to ignore that a little bit. His defense has been excellent. His defensive rebound rate is like 22% on really one of the better defensive rebounding teams of all time. He's the power forward on one of the best defenses of all time, if not one of the best defenses that we've ever seen through this period of the season. You got to get a second spur on there, too, with considering that they have the best point differential of all time through this point in the season. So, yeah, I thought he was a clear guy who had to be on there. To me and Blake, you know, I have him on my wild card. He was last in, mostly due to the missed time. But, again, I think he is just has enough of a track record of being a great player and also just a guy you want to have in the All-Star game, too, with his dunks. So I had him as a wild card. And then my final wild card was Klay Thompson. And I also had Chris Paul and James Harden as my guards, by the way, if I didn't say that. Who are your wild cards?
So my wild cards, I have Damian Lillard over him. I think Lillard has played an underappreciated role in the Blazers' surprising season so far. I mean, McCollum has been more celebrated in the way because he's such a wonderful surprise, but Lillard has been really good. Yeah, his defense is his defense, but his job as the primary ball handler is to make sure that their offense is good and their offense is done very well. I considered Klay, of course, but I didn't go with him. The last spot is the difference between the difference between the two of us in philosophy. LaMarcus Aldridge on your criteria is better. I think that DeAndre has had a better season, and that's crazy for me because.
Well, let me ask you this: if you wanted to go out and win a game tomorrow, you want LaMarcus Aldridge on your team or DeAndre Jordan?
It depends on what else you have. I mean, if you
yeah, I know, but just say you have average guys around those.
Yeah, but that's just not the criteria I use. I agree with you that LaMarcus Aldridge is a better basketball player and that his team is better and all that. But I think that DeAndre, like his role with this team has been important, especially with Blake Griffin missing so much time, and that they've done well. And I completely understand like where you're going with it, and I have no opposition to it. It's just that for me, DeAndre has had a better season so far. And also with him, you have the dynamic of, you know, he's been consistently kind of on this fringe for a little bit, and I think that that's a good time to dip him up for maybe for one shot. But I completely understand the idea of having more Spurs. The idea that I have more Clippers than Warriors is insane to me, but that's just not the way I do it.
Yeah, to me, if you could say, all right, who's a better player if I want to go win a game right now, and you can clearly answer that question in favor of one of the other guys, you damn well better have a ton of other reasons why that is. I mean, maybe if the guy's team has just been terrible or he's missed just a crap load of time up until now. But to me, all those really are in favor of LaMarcus, just with the team that he's on, with his decision to come to San Antonio, the way that he is fit in, been a great team player. I think all that just makes him way ahead of DeAndre Jordan. And you know, you said DeAndre's kind of been kind of at this level for a while. I wouldn't say that. I think this is really the first time that you could point to him as really even being legitimately in this conversation to me. I mean, there's a few others that deserve consideration. Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
I did not include him because I think he's still really good defensively, but not someone that I really see as a huge positive on offense anymore, maybe even a slight liability when you get down to it. You know, really has just been average efficiency. And considering his role and that he shoots close to the basket on most of his shots, he should be better than that. I mean, you know, he's 40 years old. He should be better than that. But if you're going to be in this conversation, I think you have to be a little bit better than that. Gordon Hayward, just not quite dominant enough of a scorer to me to really get into this. I mean, when you look at him compared to a guy like Harden, it's not quite there. Dwight Howard, in and out of the lineup, too inconsistent for my taste. And then Dirk Nowitzki, not quite playing enough minutes, too big of a defensive liability. I think he was probably my toughest omission just because of what Dallas has been able to do as a team and how incredibly important he is still to their offense, even though his one-on-one skills have declined. I mean, it kind of really came down to Dirk versus Klay Thompson for me in that last spot.
And two more guys that I considered in very different ways for this, but the issue with them is time. Derek Favors, who I think if he had played even close to a full half of a season, he would have gotten my spot over you had LaMarcus, I had DeAndre. Like he had that spot until the back spasms happened. And the other guy who, like, when I was thinking about, you know, the last backcourt spot, I actually for a brief minute considered putting Bledsoe on just as a note of how important he, like, how important he was, and just, you know, then giving that spot as an injury replacement to Lillard or to Klay Thompson. And, you know, that's kind of a weird way of doing it, but he was really good this year while he was on the court.
Yeah, so who is our difference then? I have Klay and LaMarcus, and you have Lillard and DeAndre Jordan.
Yes.
That's our difference. Yeah, Lillard. Yeah, I forgot to say that Lillard was a really tough omission for me too. He would have been right in there with Nowitzki as well. And this is not a slight on Lillard. I actually ranked him number 10, probably a little high, especially with you know, how badly his defense cratered in the playoffs. But I ranked him number 10 last year on my list of the top 10 players in the league. I do still think that he's like a mini Steph in the way that his shooting can break defenses. He just doesn't hit that shot quite often enough, and he hasn't gotten it together yet defensively. But he does deserve a lot of credit. I think he's a really, really good player, and he was a tough omission for me. Ultimately, the reason I went with Thompson, one was just because the Warriors are so good. Another one is that they, in the two games that he has missed, they have basically been their two of their three worst games of the year offensively. What he does on the backside of those pick and rolls, the fact that he just has such a quick release with his height, he can get his shot off against most guys who are guarding him. You just cannot leave him at all. He allows the Warriors to play 4-on-4, and I think that is, if not as important as what Draymond and Steph do offensively, nearly as important. And then he's a quality defensive player as well.
Yeah, Klay is certainly worthy of consideration. If we were not able to do the conference, you know, he would have made the team for sure.
All right, let's do a little off-season preview. And this is something that we're probably not going to get into a ton of. All right, these are off-season preview. Trade deadline preview is what this is. Probably not going to get into a ton of specific deals because we have that mock trade deadline podcast coming up that's going to be just like a huge blowout, and we're really looking forward to it. It's going to be complex. Hopefully it'll work out. But for right now, we kind of want to just set the stage for what some of these teams need. Are they buyers and sellers? Who are the players that they might be looking to move potentially? And what are kind of the future concerns for them as they set up for this summer? So let's start with the New York Knicks.
Yeah, the Knicks are a really fun team to think about in this context because they're probably, the expectation is, especially with how much they improved, that they're going to be better, let's say, 2 years from now than now. But the core of who makes them successful now, other than Porzingis, is older than probably some expect. You know, when you think about the guys, Robin Lopez, Carmelo Anthony, Aaron Aflalo, Calderon, very few of those guys, if any of them, other than Porzingis, will be better moving forward than they are right now. However, the hope is that they will eventually get younger and those guys will grow into improvements over that, or they'll just supplement it with other guys.
Yeah, to me, really, the first question is kind of where they are in the success cycle to determine whether they're buyers and sellers. They've improved immensely this year, and they've still hovered around 500 then, even as some of the competition has kind of come back to them, teams like the Magic, the Hornets, the Celtics, to where now you can't really just write off this season, right? So there's at least something that would make you say, hey, this could actually be a team that might be trying to buy a little bit. Then you consider they don't really have any assets. You consider that they are trying to build around Porzingis. They want to probably use cap space. And also, I mean, the other thing that would make you think that they're buyers is they don't have their draft pick, so there's no real benefit to selling anything. But they don't really have anything to sell either. So, I actually ultimately don't see them as either, which makes me think that we're not going to see a ton of deals for them. Maybe you could see, and even Jose Calderon, you might say they want to dump his salary, but he's actually essential to what they're doing. I think they're going to try to push for the playoffs this year, and there's no reason not to because they don't have their draft pick.
So one of the ways that I like to think about teams at the trade deadline is, would the moves that they could or should make more sense to do in February or in July? And with the Knicks, it's pretty clear cut that they should lean towards July, just because the players that they would theoretically move, they need them right now. You talked about Calderon. I think that's a great example of this. And there aren't that many teams that really need the benefit of him for the rest of this year. Like, that's really why you would do it, is if that helps kind of sweeten it. And that gets into the Knicks situation, which I think is the most interesting, is the financial component, not really for this year, but for next year.
Yeah, Calderon is due about $7.7 million for next year. I could see them either trying to trade him away or stretching him to, which would get his number down to about $2.5 million for over the next 3 years if they do that in the summer. But it doesn't really make sense to move him right now because they need him. You know, if they had just, you know, if they were five games below 500 right now instead of 22-22, I think it would be a lot easier for them to maybe kind of sell off, try to get a draft pick or even some second rounders to bring in a little bit more young talent. But I really don't think that that's something that they want to do now. I think they want to push for the playoffs, which I think is, you know, that makes perfect sense. But I mean, is there anything on this team that you would look at as an asset that they could use to go get somebody to bolster them to try to get into the playoffs? I don't really see anyone, do you?
No, I mean, because the guys that they have that are, let's say, intriguing to teams are young enough that I don't think the Knicks want to sell on them. You know, like Langston Galloway, if they wanted to move him, I'm sure a team would be interested in him, but I don't think that he would draw the type of player or asset that you want to do. And the other challenge for the Knicks is their high-end salaries are all guys that they're pretty happy with. And even if you get down to, let's say, Derek Williams, who has been pretty good for them recently, you know, he's in the mid-level exception range. So if you're going to try to get a guy who's really going to help them, you're not going to, like, let's say, theoretically, Galloway and Derek Williams, that's not going to really get you a guy who's going to move the needle that much.
Yeah, you might have said at a previous time that Derek Williams, who's going to be making about $4.5 million for next year, Aaron Afal making $8 million, those guys have player options. You might have said, hey, these guys might opt in. We need that space. We got to get rid of them. But they're both playing well enough now that you would probably expect them to opt out, frankly. And also their cap holds are not really that much higher. They'll probably both get higher annual salaries next year if they keep playing like this. And their cap holds are only 120% of what they're making this year. So not really that tough to hold on to them. And then Galloway, he and Lance Thomas are also guys who have much smaller cap holds. Galloway will be restricted. Thomas will be unrestricted. Much smaller cap holds than, you know, what their eventual salaries figure to be if they keep playing this well. So you could imagine the Knicks holding off, then using cap space on to bring in someone else and then re-signing all those guys. The problem is you probably don't want to re-sign all of those guys to big, huge deals, and then you're basically stuck with no flexibility again. But that's more of a question for the summer. I mean, really, Galloway and Thomas, the only guys I think of as assets that you could trade, but I think they're going to want to hold on to them because if the plan is to use cap space, then you can re-sign them by exceeding the cap, using their small cap holds to accentuate their cap space in the meantime.
The elephant in the room here is Melo, but part of the reason why I haven't brought him up earlier is just because of his no-trade clause, there isn't really a ton that you can say. If I were the GM of the Knicks, I would be listening to see what teams are interested in, and if something comes across, I would hand it over to him. But if that doesn't happen, then there's not much you can do.
Yeah, and it's too bad, really, I mean, that they're kind of stuck in this limbo now of not really having a way to get better or worse, but I would expect a pretty quiet trade deadline for the Knicks. Maybe not what Knicks fans would want to hear, but I also think that Phil Jackson has done a good job of really being patient, which we wondered whether he could do at his age, but he has been pretty patient. I don't think he's going to try to sell any future picks or anything, and really selling off the assets, they're too good to do that, so I think it's going to be pretty quiet for them.
Yeah, I do too.
Atlanta, to me, though, is much more interesting. That where they are right now, Al Horford, of course, can be a free agent at age 30. He is projected to get the max. They can offer him more than other teams can. His max can be about $25 million, but they can offer him the 7.5 annual raises, and even more importantly, that fifth year with his bird rights since he's been there forever. Even with his $18 million cap hold, though, they project at around $16 million in room, assuming that they do not bring back Mike Scott or Shelvin Mack, both of whom are non-guaranteed. And, you know, if they wanted to move on from someone like Tiago Splitter, that could open up another $9 million, get him pretty close to Mack's room, you know, Justin Holiday, Walter Tavares. They could move some guys around a little bit. Tim Hardaway is another guy they could maybe just get rid of. So they could probably, in a pinch, get to max cap space, especially if the cap goes up higher than the $89 million that's projected. They have all their draft picks in the future. They also have a lottery-protected 2018 first-rounder that's coming from Minnesota from the Adrian Payne trade last year. Do you see this team as a potential buyer or seller? You know, I think they have as good an argument as anyone to be the second best team in the East right now.
Yeah, I think that you have a pretty solid incentive to buy just on the logic that you need to make sure you do everything in your power to that Al Horford comes back. Also, when you consider what they did with their first round pick last year, probably makes you a little bit more comfortable trading it this year because, you know, you're not going to get much for it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think any GMs actually think that way. It's like, oh yeah, we've done poorly at drafting, so now our draft picks don't matter. They clearly don't think that that's going to be the case for them in the future. I do think as well that for most teams they should be a buyer, right? Like this is, and they have some needs which we'll get to, but just in the general sense, Horford going to be 30, Millsap 30, Jeff Teague getting pretty old. I mean, they really don't have a ton of young talent that is in the pipeline right now. Maybe Schroeder is the only guy you could look at. Kent Bazemore is going to be a free agent. I mean, that's another thing, actually. If they, with his cap hold, they'll probably be maybe down to about $13 million or so in space, which I should have included. But, you know, they have enough talent on this team. I mean, the question is, I guess, what do they need? And is there anything out there if they're to trade a pick, if they're even to trade Schroeder? You know, those I would sort of look at those as kind of the options of things to trade. Could they get something that's really going to get them competing with Cleveland? And does it matter? Do they need to just try to do it anyway?
It's hard because I don't see a team right now that looks at Dennis Schroeder and says, oh, he's for sure our point guard of the future, like starting point guard of the future, not a guy to have on your roster. And I think it would be great for them, as much as I like Kent Bazemore and, you know, Kyle Korver, I think it would be great to have another swingman who was starter caliber, whoever they kind of fit with, ideally if they were, let's say, under the age of 25 or younger. But I don't think you can get that for Dennis Schroeder right now. Yes, he's cheap for another year, and that gets into another question of, you know, like what kind of salaries you could get back for him, though they do have filler guys. But I would prefer it if they could allocate it that way, but that requires somebody valuing your asset at a higher, probably at a higher level than you value it.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I would be on the phone about Schroeder. I would be on the phone about a potential first-round pick. You made a great point about the potential optics to Al Horford. They want to look like they did go for it. Now, that is not at all what this Hawks regime has a track record of doing, right? Selling future assets. I mean, I guess they did that a little bit to get Hardaway, but I think that was more they thought Hardaway was undervalued. That has not proven to be the case so far. But they really have sort of always tried to maintain flexibility. They also might not necessarily want to take on long-term salary more in the for the summer, thinking that they could use some cap space and try to get another wing there. But to me, unless you are able to get some awesome guy in free agency, which I wouldn't be counting on with the number of teams that have a lot of space and the fact that Atlanta has not particularly been successful in getting the marquee free agent so far, I think that I would be trying to go for it this year. I think this year, despite the fact that they've been kind of, you know, a little bit above average so far this year, is their best chance still because their best players are dropping off. We've already seen that with Kyle Korver this year. I mean, and that's going to be coming with guys like Horford and Millsap. Why not just try to get in, see if you can address your weaknesses against Cleveland and see if you can take that team.
Do you have any potential targets in mind? Just guys who make sense? I have trouble with that with them, but again, it really depends on who values Schroeder because he's your best piece.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, some of those picks too. But yeah, you know, I don't yet. I really would need to go through and see. I mean, well, it's probably easier to just talk about what do they need too. I mean, I think another wing, you know, a guy with a little bit more size than Bazemore and Korver have. I mean, Cephalosha can kind of guard those guys, but I think he's not good enough offensively. Hasn't really shown that he can play a huge number of minutes. A shot blocker would always be nice. A really awesome point guard would be nice too. You know, I'm not sure that Teague is quite good enough to really win with at the highest levels in the playoffs, and Schroeder, not him necessarily either. I mean, one of the things that makes it tough though is for a team like this that has quality at every position, there's not like an obvious upgrade candidate.
Yeah, I mean, the guy that I thought of, and I'm not saying this is a trade target, but just kind of the type of player that would be nice for them would be somebody like Jay Crowder, somebody who could defend, who could play multiple positions, who can hit shots, but those guys aren't going to be on the market this year.
Yeah, anyone who has a guy like that under contract is going to be holding on to him, and any guy like that who's available is going to be a $20 million player in this market in the off season. So maybe there are some guys that they could try to look at who would maybe could be undervalued. I'm just not sure that that guy is necessarily out there. And then is it worth impacting your cap space? I don't know. But I mean, if a deal is out there for this team and they have maybe more assets than some good teams, I would try to make that deal if I could, because this is the year to me to go for it for them, because it's their chances are just going to get worse as time goes on.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of thinking about it with them. Another weird thing, it's a little bit far off in the future to really think about it, but other than Horford, almost all of their other players expire the same summer, which is the summer of 2017, which if it were me would make me a little bit more comfortable having long-term money, just because with the extension process the way it is for the duration of this CBA, you're not really going to see much with those guys. So if you can find somebody who's making, let's say, like $5 million a year, something like that, who the team just doesn't want to have that on their books, if I'm Atlanta, I consider that, because if Horford wants to, you know, if Horford leaves, you're kind of going to be screwed either way. So if you can get somebody who's an undervalued asset in that range, I would happily gun for it.
Think they would ever consider trying to sell high on Ken Bazemore?
I don't think that just doesn't sound like the Hawks to me. I mean, the times that they've moved guys where I thought it was kind of a little bit maybe on the early side was like the weird Nogueira trade, but that was to clear space, which they end up using on Tabo. But I don't see them doing it. And honestly, he's been so good for them. I mean, what are the chances that you get that even if they have, let's say, like $10 million in space, what are the chances that you get somebody as good as Ken Bazemore with that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think maybe that they feel really the biggest reason I thought of that was because of the way that they treated Demari Carroll last year, and treated makes it sound like it was bad, but just they felt like, all right, we are not going to pay him $15 million a year the way Toronto is. We have sort of made him into a player. They have been correct that they could make Bazemore into a player. Maybe they feel like he is more of a fungible guy, and really I think more of it is he's playing really, really well right now, and they think of him as a guy that they're not going to want to pay, you know, $10 million a year to or something, maybe even more, who knows, next year, though they do, and they're also in the same position with him as they were with Carroll, right? He's got an early bird free agent, so they either are going to have to break into their cap space to re-sign him or hope that he re-signs for the early bird exception, which is going to start at about $6 million a year, and that's probably not going to be enough to get it done for him. And so do you want to sacrifice $8 million in your cap space, $10 million in your cap space to retain Bazemore? Maybe you're better off trying to get something for him now. The question, as you noted, of course, is who are you going to replace him with that's going to make you as good this year? Maybe they'll just say Tabo. You know, they think that he can start, but you know, I don't think he's as good as Bazemore anymore. His shooting is a question. His durability is a question. So you'd have to get someone back for him. I mean, maybe if someone like Charlotte were out of it, you could say, all right, we'll trade you Bazemore, and although they don't really have a use for Schroeder. So, you know, it's really, there are not a ton of guys that they could consolidate with. But I do think that there is a reason to try and move Bazemore, because I think it's unlikely that they retain him in the offseason due to those early bird limitations.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there.
All right, let's get going here. Have a good weekend. You got anything to plug?
Yeah, my piece on Minnesota, which I alluded to last night, is now out on Real GM. It's about basically kind of the dry run that I think that Sam Mitchell should approach and absolutely will not, but that the way that they should think about the rest of the season.
There's also that piece that I wrote on the Cauldron about Kent Bazemore and some other guys who've really improved or cratered their free agent value for 2016, which you should absolutely check out. Also, if you'd like to support the show, an iTunes rating or review, very much appreciated. Those have been instrumental in our helping to get some sponsors. And also using that cap space code on Helix Sleep to get yourself a great night's sleep as well for a great price and very convenient is another excellent way to support the pod as well. And share it on social media. If you don't want to do either of those things, tell a friend or retweet the link to the pod, any of that stuff. Really helps us keep this little endeavor going as well. So thanks to Danny for coming on, and we will talk to y'all after the weekend.